Shilling Show continues here. It is a Tuesday edition of the program. We welcome you here, and we welcome to this program each and every month David Murata, the president of Murata Wealth Management. Today, is there something wrong? People are paying more tax than you legally owe. Is that good or is that bad? Well, it would seem obvious to most people, but there's a lot of people in the country who have a hard time thinking clearly on issues like this. David, welcome back to the Shilling Show.
Yeah, thank you so much for having me.
All right. So this has been the topic of attack against Republicans, most recently Donald Trump, but we've heard this before, haven't we?
We have. Mitt Romney was criticized for how much he paid in taxes or didn't pay, and I tried to do an analysis of that and say he was actually incredibly generous and gave away a lot of money, and that's how he reduced his taxes. It was a thing that we ought to be applauding rather than decrying and saying how terrible it was. And it always depends on what you pick as the numerator and what you pick as the denominator, what you get for a percentage. Obviously, you can pay very little tax if you give all your money away, and you can get a number that's very, very low. On the other hand, you gave all your money away, so if you look at what you got to keep, that could be very, very low as well. Mm-hmm. And so it all depends on how you frame the question. But I was hoping that in this time that we have together, we can rise above the personalities of this particular election to actually talk about some of the theory of taxation. Because of all the things that they could criticize Republican candidates for, when it comes to taxation, I'm always surprised by how naive they are about the way the tax code works, the way it ought to work. And they put a layer of morality on top of the tax code that just doesn't exist. So what I'd like to talk about is, should you pay any more tax than you're legally required to, or put another way, is there some morality that supersedes legally abiding by the tax code that we ought to have? And I think what most people don't realize is that the tax code is a very, very complex set of rules. The tax code is thousands and thousands of pages. My taxes alone are over 100 pages simply to fill out. And were you to read through my tax code, you would have no idea whether or not they were filled out correctly. You would have no idea whether or not the deductions were correct. You would look at everything and say, I have no idea what this is.
And I have to say the same thing over mine.
Exactly. I mean, I've studied, taken several classes on the tax code. It's part of the CFP. In addition to that, I took a federal taxation class just to try to understand it better. And I think what most people don't understand is that even the IRS doesn't know what the tax code means. And when they were queried and asked questions, they got more than half the questions wrong, which is an incredible statement for IRS workers when they're asked about the tax code. And there are some parts of the tax code, again, people don't quite understand this, but there's some part of the tax code that have never been decided what it means. And that's a shame. And the reason why it's never been decided is the tax code is ambiguous as to exactly what it means, and there have been no court cases to decide the issues. And then I did learn the standard answer for every single tax question you could ever ask, and the standard answer is, it depends.
Well, there is a purpose in the ambiguity, the purpose that serves the government, correct?
It does. They can usually come after you and find some interpretation to go after you, and some CPAs err on the side of getting every possible deduction and reducing taxes as low as possible. And some err on the side of playing it safe, even when they could get more deductions, and that's a matter more of style than it is of anything else. My rule is, if I'm sitting in the court, in tax court, in the seat, and I have to justify what I've done, would I feel comfortable and on very strong grounds of doing it? And because of my own position, I'm fairly conservative when it comes to pushing those bounds. But I'm also fairly aggressive for all the ones that are quite legal. And so in preparation for this radio show, I listed 33 ways that you can pay less tax legally that are considered quite standard deductions, and that taking them would be quite normal and quite legal. And they have absolutely no morality behind them. They're just rules.
You know, it's an atrocious situation when the government creates a behemoth of a tax code that is so complex, and then there are no rules by which people can play fairly. So given that that is the case, why is it like that? How did it get to be like that? It couldn't have always been like that, because we didn't even have a federal income tax for a long time.
Yeah, the reason why libertarians and conservatives think that we need to simplify the tax code is because hundreds of thousands of lobbyists have put provisions in the tax code. Sometimes they only apply to three or four people, but they get put in because of lobbying efforts. And you can lobby Congress for two different reasons. You can lobby Congress because you're rent-seeking. In other words, you're seeking goodies from the government. You want them to either help you or your business or punish your other businesses. Or you can just lobby the government, what I call defensive lobbying, just to ensure they don't do something stupid to ruin your business or your life, which they do quite regularly as someone else has lobbied them to punish you because you're a competitor. And when you get enough layers upon layers of tax code, the tax code becomes very, very complex. I think if you had a requirement that every single congressman had to fill out their own taxes with no help, you would get a simplified tax code. But the truth of the matter is that most of them, even the ones that sit on the tax committees, most of them don't fill out their own taxes. They have CPAs to do that. And I can guarantee you that every single CPA who is employed is going to try to work to ensure that you have as few taxes to pay as possible.
You know, I love the concept of having the Congress people who are voting on this being forced to comply personally with the tax code and then see what happens. Boy, if only we had somebody who would bring that up and enough people to pass it, it would be amazing. David Morata is our guest. Ah, let's talk about paying more tax than you legally owe. Good thing or bad? 977-1070 is the phone number. Hey, we're going to come back on the other side and talking about some of these deductions you can and should take. And we'll also take your calls, 977-1070, when The Shilling Show continues. Shilling Show continues, a Tuesday edition. David Morata is our guest. Is something wrong or right about paying more tax than you legally owe? A national discussion that started off with Donald Trump's tax returns, but it's been actually going on for a while. David Morata is the president of Morata Wealth Management, online at moratahonmoney.com, and 977-1070 is a phone number. So we've kind of set this up, and there are some deductions that we want to talk about specifically because you put together a rather comprehensive list, David.
Yeah, we were talking earlier before the break about how the tax code is an impressive and huge set of rules.
Yes.
One way to think about it is that it is like a game, and it's like Magic the Gathering, which is a collectible card game in which the cards are always changing every single year. And the rules are so complex that the Magic the Gathering company is constantly putting out errata and rulings about how different cards interact.
Uh-huh.
They say that more time and effort has been put into Magic the Gathering deck building than it took us to put a man on the moon. And so if you think about it as a game that people play, CPAs are the Magic the Gathering experts and tournament players. CPAs put so much time and effort in trying to figure out the tax code and how to game the tax code. And with great complexity comes great opportunity. And so you should expect that a complex tax code is going to be gamed. And people are going to figure out how to do it both on the very rich end and on the very poor end as well, because there is great opportunity all across the spectrum. And one way of simplifying the tax code would actually mean there's less gaming. Mm. It's very difficult to game tic-tac-toe.
Yes.
And if we had a tax code that was as simple as tic-tac-toe, then we would be able to have less gaming of the system. We would be able to lobby. I mean, can you imagine? I want to be able to put a triangle in the upper right corner. You know, that's the kind of lobbying we get. And we just need to say no to all of that lobbying and try to simplify the tax code. So the simplest tax code possible, there's three simple tax codes, mm-hmm. but the simplest tax code possible is a poll tax or a head tax, meaning you take what the government needs, you divide by the number of citizens, and that's what everyone owes.
Mm-hmm.
That is fair. It's if you had 10 people in the room and they had to pay for something, everyone would get charged 10%. And that's as fair as you can get a tax code. And people think that's highly terrible, and they rail against it. But that is the measure of fair by which everything else is measured. Now, a second measure would be a flat tax, meaning, great, whatever you make, you have to pay 10%. And then the rich people are going to be paying more. In fact, in your group of 10 people, most of it's going to get paid by one of the 10.
Mm-hmm.
And that's not as fair, but at least it's flat. And there, since it's a flat tax, there's less ways of gaming the system. Because no matter how much money that person, the richest person gives to his children or his wife, they're going to get taxed at the same rate he's going to get taxed. And so there's no trying to fill the lower tax brackets like there is with a progressive tax. With a progressive tax, the minute dad can give money to his children or his wife, he's actually filling the lower tax brackets multiple times, and he's gaming the system.
Let me say one thing about that, about the tax, which is a true flat tax, just 10%, for example. The concept of the founders of the country, and they were talking about this when it came to property taxes and making sure that those didn't become progressive, but the concept that Alexander Hamilton brought forward was, if everyone's paying, everybody gets hurt whenever you raise the taxes, and people will be united against such things. That was the protection they were trying to instill, and those were the concepts. As soon as you start dividing and setting a line, David, and if I'm below the line and you're above it, somebody in my position would say, go ahead, above the line, that's great. I'll get more goodies from Jane's Golden Goodie Bag, and I won't have to pay for it. So you set up this perverse incentive for higher taxes on certain groups instead of making everybody be punished by taxation equally, which would discourage a bigger government and more taxation in general.
Yeah, the populist view of what I call punitive taxation, meaning I want to hurt that other group, so yes, I'm going to tax them a lot. Because I don't like them and I don't like their policies, and we're just going to keep heaping taxes on them. Punitive taxation is why much of the country is angry and upset and spitting mad. Because can you imagine if another group were hated the way that the rich are hated, or the productive are hated, or the business owners are hated in this country today? Can you imagine if that kind of hate was directed at any other group, what a moral outcry there would be? So I'm right there with you. Any kind of punitive taxation produces a trickle-down taxation, which is terrible. In other words, if I want to make twice what my employees make, the more you tax me, the more I have to up my salary. So I'm still, as take-home pay, making twice what my employees make. And you can go through those formulas, and no matter how much tax you heap on me, you're heaping the same percentage on all of my employees, because I just adjust all the salaries so that I'm making proportionally the same amount I want to make. So trickle-down taxation is just like trickle-down prosperity. It does happen. It takes a while, and it's hidden from view, but it does happen.
Okay, the third way.
The third taxation would be a consumption tax, a straight consumption tax. The difficulty with this is the rich consume less as a percentage of their income, and so they would actually pay less than they would under a straight flat tax. But it would encourage saving and investing, which is actually what you want to do to build wealth. Wealth is not what you spend, it's what you save and invest.
I want to say something on that point, because it seems to me the policies today are meant to discourage saving and perhaps investing, but rather to spend everything as soon as you get it. And then we lament across the country. There was a story yesterday that most Americans don't even have more than $1,000 in savings. But what did you expect when you're disincentivizing saving?
Yeah, if you take two families and one saves and invests 15% of their take-home pay and the other just spends all of that money, the second family who spends it all will get a lot more government handouts. And the family that saves and invests 15% will get a lot more taxation. So we're discouraging as much as possible saving and investing. And maybe it should be the other way around. And that's why a consumption tax actually puts the incentives in the right place. And for libertarians, conservatives, or even just economists, what matters more are not your good intentions. What matters more are the incentives you put on the economy. Because people will respond to incentives. And if you give them an incentive in the tax code, they will take advantage of that. If you pay them an extra $100 for jumping up and down on their left foot, everybody's going to be jumping up and down on their left foot. It's amazing what people will do simply to try to change taxes and to lower their taxes and to keep more of their own money. And you should expect that incentive in government no matter what.
So going back to the discussion that's taking place currently, I heard one of the vice presidential candidates ask the other vice presidential candidate, well, are you not taking all of the deductions you're entitled to? Is that, can you tell me that? And of course, there was no answer to the question, but really, why would anybody not?
There's no reason why you should pay more tax than you ought to by law. And everyone is gaming the system. That's the funny way of looking at it. And it's why when someone criticizes someone else for taking advantage of the tax code, the populist view should be not outrage at the person who's taking advantage of the tax code. The outrage ought to be at the person asking such a stupid question. Mm-hmm. And who is not advocating for a more simplistic version of the tax code, a simpler tax code. If you think about it, prior to, was it 1914 or 1917 when they put in the constitutional amendment that put in the federal tax? At any rate, prior to that date, you did not have to report your income to the government. And I think that's a wonderful bit of privacy. The government shouldn't have to know my income at all. There's no reason why all of my finances ought to be have to be reported to the government. But that's what the tax code has done. And in many ways, that actually outrages people as well, that they have to do all of this reporting to the government. At least a poll tax or a consumption tax, you wouldn't have to report your income to the government. You could keep that private. It would be between, you know, just your own. And if you think about it, imagine if the government required people to report something that liberals thinks is none of the government's business. Maybe you have to report every sexual encounter you have. And can you imagine the outrage there would be? That's none of the government's business. And what most people don't realize is for business owners, their business is none of the government's business. It's a private business and a private enterprise, and we don't think we should have to report all of that stuff to the government. Yes, we would like to pay our fair share of taxes, but isn't there a simpler way than having to keep track of every single thing we buy and every single thing that we do in order to try to deduct it? And along those lines, the deductions become very crazy, mm-hmm. and sometimes the IRS loses crazy deductions. You know, so you get an exotic dancer who has breast augmentation, and she gets to deduct that as a working expense, and the IRS lost that case. So you can imagine all of the different deductions that are out there and trying to take advantage of them. If you can win in tax court, it's a legal deduction.
977-1070 is the phone number. One segment left with David Morata. Greg, hold the line. We'll get to you on the other side of the break, and there's a line open for you right now at 977-1070. Comments, questions, challenges, we'd love to hear from you. The Shilling Show and David Morata back in a moment. Final segment of this hour of The Shilling Show with David Morata. He's online at moratahonmoney.com. We're talking about the concept of paying more tax than you legally owe. Isn't that wonderful? Isn't that patriotic? Because if you don't, you must hate the military. You're in favor of starving the children. You want bad roads, etc., etc., etc. Let's go to the phones and say hi to Greg, who I'm sure hates the military, wants bad roads, and wants to, I guess, let all the trees die as well.
Yeah, well, I just cut a tree down today, but it was already dead. Basically, you know, the socialists don't want you to save. They don't like saving because they feel like that that money, if you've got it in a little lump somewhere, is not being equally redistributed to the rest of the world. That's point one. And then point two is there's another tax that people don't really talk about. It's how the Fed, with Keynesian economics, interjects the money supply and all that, where then your money's not worth as much, so you can't go out and buy stuff. And unless you're in the market and know how to play that, you can't offset it. So that's a punishment for the masses, I think, is the Fed. And I just, you know, Hillary Clinton will make all this worse. So I'll just get off and get you all's view with that. Thank you.
Thank you, Greg.
Yeah, Greg is correct in both comments. First of all, much of the tax code is to redistribute money. It's not actually to spend money. So they're going to tax you if you do this, and they're going to give you money if you do that. And increasingly, the tax code has become a greater and greater chance to redistribute money from the family who saved 15% to the family who spent every dime they owned, even if they had the exact same income. And I think there is a morality about the tax code in the sense that when you're hurting virtue and you're rewarding vice, I think the tax code has the incentives in the wrong place. And maybe it's not moral, but I would prefer to live in a world in which we encouraged saving and investing,
yeah,
and we discouraged frivolous spending. Hillary is, I know, announcing today additional portions of her tax code, and she's announcing additional goodies and handouts for the middle class. And the worst part about populism is it's very popular, and that's why I'd like to raise the debate about taxes a little bit more and say, should we really be redistributing wealth to give people refundable tax credits simply because they're hopping on their left foot or not? And then Greg's second comment about the Fed and devaluing the dollar is really the Federal Reserve's monkeying with the money supply. Mm-hmm. You know, is one of the things for measures of economic freedom is a stable currency, and it's one of the things that the Fed has really hurt since 2000 or 2008 even. And the inflation that we have in this country is taxed. We tax inflation because when things go up in value, we have to pay a capital gains tax. Even if you just buy gold and put it in your basement, the tax on inflation is 28%, and so you're going to actually fall 28% behind inflation.
And look at your real estate taxes.
Yeah, it's amazing. And all of that is really a tax on people who are stupid enough to keep their money in U.S. dollars. It's one of the reasons why when people ask what's a safe investment, one of the things we don't say is dollars, because you know that dollars are going to go down consistently every single year, year after year after year. It has a negative real return, and so there's no real, there's no good incentive to keep money in dollars. Keep it in any kind of equities. Even if the equities bounce around in the short term, in the long term, at least you know they're not going down year after year after year.
Let's go back to the phones. Just a couple minutes left with David Morata, and Chris is on the line. Hello, Chris. Chris, are you there? I'm sorry, we lost Chris. Okay. Let's go to a couple of these things here, and some of them are really – I have the list in front of me, and you're going to publish this soon, but some of them run counter to what I would want to do, but I understand why you're saying it. Like, one of them is to take advantage of the Obamacare subsidy. Oh, my gosh, that kills me. That pains me. I haven't even looked into it, and I put my family into health sharing, so we don't have to do this stupid Obamacare. But I understand why you're saying it, and I guess if I was in that position, I'd have to do it, but it makes me sick.
Yeah, and the easiest way to do it would be for you and not maybe perhaps you, but for a husband and wife to get divorced or never married, and then the wife now, if she's a stay-at-home mom, has no income.
Oh.
And so you can go out, you can make a great living, you will get taxed at your tax rate,
mm-hmm.
And now your wife and children will be destitute, and they will actually qualify for all kinds of federal spending. The way that the government has monkeyed with and actually ruined marriage in multiple ways, the government should not be involved in marriage in any way whatsoever. I think marriage is a private and spiritual bond between two people, and the government should not be putting laws in place when you've done something which has nothing to do with the government. When you've done something. The government got involved in marriage licensing primarily to prevent interracial marriage.
Mm.
And before that, the marriage was simply something that was done privately between two people. And so now that we have all of these laws that have grown up around marriage, many of them hurt marriage and a few help, but a lot of them hurt marriage. My wife and I have figured out that we could probably pay tens of thousands of dollars less in taxes if we were not married than if we were. So I value my marriage more than the tens of thousands of dollars. But I really do think that if I had it to do over again, I would not have a legal marriage. I would probably just have a spiritual marriage and leave the government out. But yes, if you're not married to the mother of your children, then they can collect all kinds of benefits. And it's one way of monkeying with the tax code.
And certainly that sort of mentality in many ways the government has destroyed the family as we once knew it. David Morata, that's all we have time for today. But I'll tell you what, when you finish the article, we'll get a chance to talk about these again, because there's a lot of good things that people should be taking advantage of. And you've put a list of 33 here, which are pretty remarkable.
And I will say that a dollar saved on your taxes is worth a dollar, but an extra dollar earned is only worth a small fraction because the government taxes you on it.
He's online at maradaonmoney.com, and I hope you'll visit him there.